Buckle up, you beauties, because we're about to dive deep into the world of all things hockey.
Pigeon! Woo! Woo!
A greasy pigeon isn't just any old bird, it's a message. It's letting the other guy know exactly where they stand. And it is not meant to be friendly.
You guys are sensitive over there.
And now, from the Pigeon's Nest, your hosts, Jeff Sullivan and Kevin Trussler. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Greasy Pigeon Podcast. I am your host, Jeff Sullivan, and with me, as always, there he is, that beauty of a guy, that Canadian, still celebrating Thanksgiving coming up, Kevin Trussler. Kevin, say what up to the people.
What's going on? Yep, I get the beauty of living down here in the States is I get two turkeys in a month. Three if you have it for Christmas. So
that's right.
Yep.
Three greasy turkeys for Kevin this next the next couple of weeks, huh?
Yeah, playing at an all-time high weight for sure.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of greasy moves, I would say the Bruins pulled off one with the coaching change seemingly out of nowhere. I mean, they weren't playing well. Everyone knows that. I don't think they're playing bad enough to warrant that coaching change. But not only the shocker of him leaving, Kev, but then like 4 minutes later, he ends up in St. Louis. I mean, just a crazy turn of events. What do you make out of that? What happened to Boston?
I know you and I have talked offline, you know, over the past week about this, and it definitely caught me off guard. If you were to put some money on which coach would be let go first in the season, the Bruins would have been at the bottom of the list, but it is what it is. I think that's a front office. They're trying to cover up, some gaffes that they had in the off season. And, you know, unfortunately Monty was the fall guy, and, you know, I'm glad to see that he landed on his feet. Feel sorry for the coach that was relieved right afterwards. I'm sorry, it's slipping my mind right now, but we'll see what happens. We're outside looking in, still got a lot of games left in the season. You know, hockey doesn't really start until January is my thoughts when it comes to the NHL.
Well, and don't forget the famous stat of if you're not in the playoff picture by US Thanksgiving, your percentages of making the playoffs in the NHL are increasingly low. And as of the last check, the Bruins are battling for like a first, second wild card spot, maybe on the outside looking in. So it's going to be a battle in the East for the Bruins to get in. But since the firing, they've gone 2-0, allowed one goal. They look like a different team. Some of that, you know, is that bump that comes from the room change that players are embarrassed, I'm sure. Do you think that's sustainable over the next, you know, 10 to 12 games? Or is that a two-game bump and they'll go right back to their old ways come Saturday?
There's enough veteran leadership in that locker room. I think that they can definitely get back to how the Bruins play 200-foot game. You know, it may not be pretty for those that like offensive hockey, but at the end of the day, it's what the score is at the end of the game, right? So, you know, looking at the standings right now, they're a point out, lots left. I feel confident. Buffalo's ahead of them. So, you know, again, to my older brother, who's a Sabre fan, he always celebrates when it gets to U.S. Thanksgiving, because usually they're planning the parade and then they fall dramatically. Not wishing that on them, but, you know, history tends to repeat itself every now and then.
Absolutely. And one more question for you. And our guest joined us on the line, and I really want to get to him because we got some great information to get to with our guest on junior hockey development and kind of the youth game developing to junior and making it from there. But before we get to him, Claude Julien, Bruce Cassidy, and Jim Montgomery, Jack Adams finalists, Jack Adams winners, all fired by the Boston Bruins in succession from one another. What do you make of the coaching carousel of high-level coaching in Boston?
Joe Sacco, right now, don't win the Jack Adams. That's all I'm going to say. If you tend to, just keep it below the radar, bud, that interim coach may be taken off and you can have your own plaque. But I can't make any sense of that whatsoever. But, you know, that's why I'm here and they're where they're at. So,
yep. Well, and speaking of people that know more about the game than you and I, we are joined by our guest today in the Pigeon's Nest. His name is Braden Pearl. Braden, you're the founder and CEO of AHA. I'd like you to get into all of what that means, what the advising group is all about, how you got started, and kind of what your background was. You have a lot of collegiate experience. You have a lot of junior experience. You lived kind of what both our sons are in the process of trying to do and where we're trying to help them and others get to, you know, on the show, and we welcome your expertise. But Braden, man, thank you for joining us on the Greasy Pigeon Podcast, and welcome to the nest, my friend.
Yeah, appreciate you having me.
It's so I'm from Montreal, and like you guys down in Florida, and it's a little bit chillier up here than it is down there, I'm sure. But I appreciate you guys having me on. As you guys can probably tell, if you look at my elite prospects, I played a little bit of everywhere. In junior, I was a bit of a suitcase. Didn't really understand the game. There wasn't like all this information that there is out there like there is now. So you kind of had to like ask around and try and get like different agents, advisors to help you. And people were very hush-hush back then. So it was a little bit tougher. I played in North Bay for a little bit. I played in New Jersey for a year. For a couple different teams. And then my 20-year-old year, I played a little bit of everywhere, in Manitoba, in the States, and then back finishing in the CCHL. Somehow I managed to get an NCAA D3 commitment like 2 months before school started. So really last minute, not the way I would recommend it. played Western New England for a couple years, and then played at Trine University. I transferred out after 2 years and then played there for a couple years as well. And so that was kind of like my path in a nutshell for hockey. What made me start AHA is back like when I was playing juniors, like I was saying, very difficult to get info back then. Advisors, you know, didn't have the best reputation back then. It's getting a little bit better now, still not the best. And overall, we just felt like we could do a better job back when I was like, you know, when I finished, graduated, all that, and I could get into it. I was doing substitute teaching right after I graduated, maybe a couple months later, back at my local high school back home as I was figuring out what to do. And part of that job was like, there was like a prep hockey team at that high school. I practiced with them like 2 or 3 times a week. Kids started asking me questions or like, hey, like, how'd you go through junior hockey? Like, would you recommend going this league or that league? How'd you play NCAA hockey? What was that like? Started off very casual, you know, then slowly but surely, you know, parents started calling me like, hey, could you help place my kid on this team? Could you help Joey go to this league, and then could you help him get a commitment and all that stuff? And from there, just started helping them like for a couple months, totally for free too. Next thing you know, like 20 parents are calling me like each night. And I was like, I think I should probably start charging a little bit of money for this, just for my time. And then the rest is history. Kind of just snowballed. We started up officially like the past 5 years. Started posting YouTube videos like three, four years ago. And since then, we've just been in the ground running. So it's a little bit about my background. I don't like going too much into it, but I think I feel like a lot of kids feel a similar path as they're going through junior, just because it is a tough road, especially if you're a goalie like your son, Jeff, or especially if you're a guy going through tier 3 junior hockey. You know, if you're not like an elite phenom at like 14 years old, it's a tough road to go through junior. And for me, my philosophy has always been put as much free information out there to help these kids out get to the next level. So overall, that's just us in a nutshell. We could definitely dive deeper into it.
No, you would know this, Braden, as the kids get older, right? They hit that 17, 18, 19, where it gets a little bit tougher. You have other things pulling your commitments possibly away. You had mentioned playing in multiple leagues and for multiple teams. You know, usually it's the survival of the fittest, right? The ones that want to continue to keep putting in that work and you know, carry on. How, I guess, for those that are listening, like when you're on a team, do you get traded? Do you get, you know, do you ask for your release? Do you, you know, I know there's a lot of moving parts with our kids playing in the USPHL. It's all based off of once you sign the contract with that team, technically, you know, you have committed for the year, unless, you know, both parties decide on a release. So, you know, bouncing between the States and Canada. Can you explain a little bit how that works?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a good question because there's a lot of different parts to it. Typically in junior hockey, unless it's major junior, then typically the teams that'll have a little bit more say. In junior A hockey, so, you know, USHL, tier 2 junior leagues, tier 3 junior leagues, typically the player and the coach have that relationship where if a player is unhappy, if he's not getting that ice time, if he wants out, typically you can talk to your coach and usually they're on the same page. However, it's happened to me before where coaches hold rights in certain leagues and they don't want to trade you, or they just trade your rights without you wanting to go. So that can happen. It doesn't happen as often, especially if you have an agent or an advisor working for you, because usually they can, you know, talk to the coach, say, hey, this is where he wants to go type thing and all that. if you're in a sanctioned league in Canada, the team owns your rights all throughout Canada. And even for sanctioned leagues in the US, you can't just bounce around the, you know, like you want from league to league. You have to go through that team. The team has to trade your rights. However, let's say you're playing in the CCHL sanctioned league in Canada. You're not happy and the coach like doesn't want to move you and you feel like you're stuck even though you want to get out of the team. You can go to an unsanctioned league. So you can go to like the NCDC in the States, you can go to the EHL, you can go to the USPHL Premier, you can also go to the BCHL. Now to move from the CCHL to the BCHL, probably not going to happen if you're not playing too much, but you're allowed to go to unsanctioned leagues. There's a September 30th rule that Hockey Canada released last year. If you decide to go to an unsanctioned league and you play after September 30th, you can't go back to a sanctioned league until the rest of the season is done. So that's one rule that's important to keep in mind. In terms of like an overall approach, the way I always see it is like, okay, if you're on a team, before you just ask for a trade, like make sure like you do everything you can. You go talk to the coach first. You say, hey, is there any way for me to get more minutes? Or a better way to do it is like, where did I lose the trust with you? You know, what can I do to really like bring value to the team and, you know, potentially get more ice time by doing it? Typically, most coaches are honest. They're upfront. They're going to tell you what you need to work on. A lot of times, if you just do that, that resolves a problem in itself. Then if you want to, like, if it's still not working out, then you can look into other leagues and then you can ask the coach for a trade. Usually you tell them kind of where you want to go. You determine what leagues are realistic and you kind of just go from there. So that'd be like my overall approach and, you know, important rules to keep in mind.
I didn't have this question to go down this road, but you just opened the door and I've done some research recently with some leagues in Canada. There has been an explosion, at least it seems like it to Kevin and I, we've talked about this, of these unsanctioned leagues, as you called them, NJPHL and the this and that. It seems like Alberta's got two or three of them that like popped up that are 8, 10 teams deep.
Yeah.
Mixed reviews, can't get players, you know, one team is great, other teams are horrible. What's the dynamic? Because in the States, tier three makes sense to us. You know, we know it, unsanctioned USPHL, which includes the NCDC, sanctioned NAHL, right, and USHL, EHL, alphabet soup all up in this place. The EHL, unsanctioned, doing their own thing. And then you have like the EJPHL, like they're everywhere, right?
Yeah.
What is going on with the separation? Is it just to put more teams out there and get people to able to make more money? Is it truly about developing players, or is it watering down the potential, making it harder for kids to find homes in the higher levels in the collegiate ranks because there's just so many places call themselves, you know, tier one, tier junior A, and they're really not? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, like some of the unsanctioned leagues are quite good. Like the BCHL, for example, fantastic league to go to, you know? But I'd say why do they occur? It's a big question. It's a good question. I'd say for Canada specifically, a big reason why leagues were going unsanctioned is because they weren't happy with all the rules and regulations that were in place from Hockey Canada. So they decided to leave that structure, fund themselves and have less restrictions so they can attract better players. That's why the BCHL left. And that's why like there was the NAHA in Ontario. It was kind of like a failed attempt for the part of the CCHL to leave. It doesn't exist anymore, but it happened a couple years ago where they tried to leave, basically. In the US, why did the EHL go unsanctioned? Why did the USPHL Premier become this ginormous league that's unsanctioned? Probably some of the similar reasons. I don't know why exactly. Not as clear as like the BCHL made it in their statements and stuff. But I would say it's probably some of the same motivations, you know, probably because it's less restrictions. It's easier to grow a league that way. You don't have to answer to big governing bodies. So I would say that's probably why.
As far as so I grew up in the era where you didn't pay money to play junior. Yeah. I played junior C and, you know, played a few games in junior B. And that has drastically changed from my understanding, still having family up in Canada and just seeing what the cost and tuition costs for some of these teams are. Is that still going on up in Canada for some of those leagues? I'm sure like the Q and the O and the Western Hockey League, those kids, I would imagine, are not paying anything to be playing there. I could be wrong. I don't know. Of the leagues that we've just touched on, is there any free tuition anywhere or is it all pay for play now?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. It's changed. Like my answer 2 years ago would have been completely different than it is now. So the major junior leagues, O, Q, and WHL, they actually pay players a small stipend to play. That's why previously players couldn't play NCAA if they played major junior. Now that whole rule has changed in the past, like, you know, couple weeks. So that's big news. That's going to change, I think, the whole landscape of junior hockey. But overall, they pay their players a small stipend in those leagues. And then for the BCHL, from the last time I checked, it's free to play. In the pandemic, some teams were charging. Now most teams aren't anymore from the last time I looked at it. AJHL, most teams aren't charging either. Out west, typically like the SJHL, the MJHL, so Saskatchewan and Manitoba, those also don't charge either for the most teams. But it's been changing. Like before the pandemic, all those leagues were free out west. It was completely free to play. Even the Maritimes Hockey League out east was free to play. Quebec, you barely had to pay anything to play junior AAA. Before the pandemic, the CCHL, the OJHL, they were charging between like $5K to $10K, depending on the team that you play for. The NOJHL in Northern Ontario is also charging, still is now, but it's really the Western leagues that change a little bit since the pandemic. Some teams are free, some aren't. So it really depends on the teams now. But I would say overall, most teams, a lot of teams are charging now in Canada.
And in the States, Braden, on the top of my head, I know NCDC is tuition free. However, I heard that some places are starting to potentially charge on NCDC level, which as soon as you get one or two teams that start doing that, it's only a matter of time, I think, till the rest follow. The NAHL, is that tuition free once you get to tier two? Yeah. What does the state's structure look like off the top of your head?
Yeah, so NCDC, so far it's tuition free. You have to pay for billets for the most part, unless you're a star player. Sometimes they cover it for you. And as an aside too, the better you are as a player, even the pay-to-play leagues, usually the better deal you're going to get cut from these teams that are pay-to-play. But the NCDC, usually you have to pay your billeting depending on the type of player you are. The NAHL is like pretty much all free from the last time I checked. Every team doesn't charge anything. And usually that you don't have to pay billeting either in the NAHL. USHL is completely free as well. But that, you know, maybe there's this random team that's charging players. But from the last time I checked, the NAHL is completely free to play.
Okay. And you mentioned this, and I think it's important since you just brought it up. The NCAA-CHL ruling, you know, we all understand it on its face, and that's the why, right? Which I think has deeper implications on college sports. I mean, we all know the stories of the amateur golfers that go win a tournament and haven't been able to take that prize money because if they did, it ruined their eligibility. This ruling essentially allows players that are paid to play to still play, you know, in the NCAA ranks. So I think it's got much, you know, bigger implications for all of U.S. college sports, which, you know, the NIL is, you know, neck deep in the football ranks and everything else. So it's all changing anyway. As far as the junior tie-in with that, Braden, you know, right now it's in the States. The path was kind of, you know, the NAHL is a good tier two landing spot. If you can get to the USHL, that's where you really want to go, right? Get your commitments, D1. You know, from the USHL, the high-level NAHL players, D3 is filled by your NCDC, maybe some premier ranks, right? And then ACHA kids fill in from everywhere else, you know, and AAU and all that stuff. Yeah. Now you have this whole other thing where, like, your good, really good U.S. players are going to end up going to Canada. I mean, we have a friend who already has benefited from this. He's playing in Canada, and he committed to Penn State. And he's, you know, he's an 08, so he's got years ahead of him. But, like, he's already working through these changes. What is that going to do for players like, take my, you know, my son, right? 07, so second year junior, goaltender. He's going to have the 4 to 5 year path in junior if he's going to have a shot to play in college, like the long path, the you know, got to age out as the goaltender to make it. But now, you know, is he going to be facing the same level of play in 3 years in the States, or is it going to change? Because again, we're watering down because now you have the same number of teams, but you just lost the top 5% of players to Canada. What is that all going to do, in your opinion, for the state of U.S. junior hockey in the wake of this ruling?
Yeah, it's a great question that, you know, I'll speculate all I want. I think I, you know, we'll see if I'm right or not, but
that's,
you never know,
for
right?
Baseless speculation, buddy. Let's do it.
All right. So I broke it down in our video like a couple weeks ago, but I think it's going to cause a massive trickle-down effect. So I think those top players that play major junior, they're going to probably end up, the ones that value school anyways, that want that longer development route, want to go NCAA, they're going to be actually the ones going NCAA D1. I still think leagues like the USHL, the BCHL, their top players are still going to end up going NCAA D1. I think it's going to be a little bit less though. I think you might see some of those guys going NCAA D3 instead. And other good tier two leagues like the NAHL, the AJ, CCHL, and so on, I think they're going to produce mainly NCAA D3 players now, maybe the odd NCAA D1 player, but I think it's going to be less. I think it's going to be mainly NCAA D3 feeders, same with like the NCDC and stuff. And then for the other leagues, like the EHL, USPHL Premier, the Tier 3 leagues mainly, I think they're mainly going to be feeding to the ACHA teams now. I think like EHL, for example, has been dominant in moving guys on to NCAA D3. But I think now with this change, it's probably going to cause a trickle-down effect where maybe they're not moving on to a bunch of NCAA D3 schools. Maybe it's going to be lower-end NCAA D3 and a lot of ACHA moving forward. So I see like a big trickle-down effect occurring. I still don't think it's impossible as a hockey player. I don't think it's going to ruin everybody's chances and stuff. It's just going to be a little bit harder, and you're just going to have more competition now. So that's kind of the way I see it from a big picture unfolding in the next 5 years or so.
And not to hijack the show, Kevin, but yeah. one more question. Do you think that the collegiate teams will see an increase in maybe teams from D3 going to D1? Like, do you think there's going to be more of a push because, to your point, there'll be so much talent being pushed into the D3 level that by default, those schools will probably that level of play could get better, that some of those teams that are fringy may move up to D1 or want to move up to D1. We see an expansion on the college side.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. So I think there will be, I'm not sure if like the D3 teams will move up to D1. I think some might. I think you're going to see definitely more D1 programs pop up. I think there's also going to be a lot more D3 programs that pop up because there's just going to be that increased demand, increased players coming in. And who knows, like I speculated in my video, maybe NCAA D2 is actually going to become a thing in hockey. Like there are some D2 schools, but they compete against D3. It's kind of insignificant in hockey. But in other sports, you see a clear D1, D2, D3. I think if hockey keeps getting more and more popular, more and more kids play, and you have this major junior effect going, like a bunch of these guys at the top level of junior going to AA D1, maybe the other leagues in the future will feed to D2, and then the other, like, you know, lower end tier 2 and tier 3 leagues feed to D3, ACHA, and so on. Who knows? That's all speculation, but I do think, I'm almost positive, though, that there's going to be more D1 programs in the next 5 years and more D3 programs as well.
I was going to touch on that, right? Because major junior up in Canada, are you still able to have a couple of overagers, 21-year-olds? The rest have to be 20 and younger, right?
Yeah, you're 20, like your 20-year-old year. Some players do turn 21, but like the 21 to 22 age range, they don't play major junior. So you have your 20-year-old year that you kind of finish off.
So like my thought is you're probably going to see a lot more older kids than it was either that or you start college late, right? The NCAA and the major junior leagues obviously do not play nice together. I think this is going to benefit NCAA hockey because those kids that age out in those junior years, they now have a spot to land if they want to continue. Going to D2 and D3 as far as NCAA, is that pay for play as well? I know you got to pay tuition and everything, but like how many scholarships are offered specifically at the D3 level with some of the kids that we know that that are wanting to go?
Yeah, I would say like D1 still going to offer scholarships. If you look at like the other sports, I don't believe D2 they offer scholarships. I'd have to double check on it. D3 doesn't offer athletic scholarships. So I don't see that changing just because with the other sports, they don't do it either, you know. But they do offer academic and financial aid scholarships for most programs. For me, for example, when I went to Trine University, super, super affordable. I got really good academic aid. I got really good financial aid as well and made the price per year like quite affordable and able for me to go despite the conversion from Canadian to USD. So I definitely think, you know, people will still be able to find ways to get good scholarship money, even though you're not getting that full ride athletic scholarship.
And I do know that some of the teams, even higher level ACHA teams, you know, you're paying to go to school or you know, you're getting financial aid or academic assistance, but the team fees, as funny as this may sound, East Texas Baptist University is a D2 ACHA program that's recruiting heavy. And I've seen the emails coming across, you know, the not targeted blanket. I'm talking blankets, right? But they tell you right in their emails, like, you know, we pay for your fees, your equipment, your gear, your, like, you're not paying to play hockey. You're paying to go to the school and you're paying normal, but you want to play hockey for them and you make it, they're covering your full ride. So it's pay for school, free for hockey. And if you're playing ACHA in college, to me, that's the best of both worlds, right? Like, I'm still going to school and I get to play hockey, but my parents aren't paying for, or I'm not paying for double or whatever that looks like. And I'm guessing that they're probably not the only one out there that is covering the cost of the sport at those universities.
Yeah, most ACHA programs
cover like the really good, pretty much all D1 programs at the ACHA level, and the good D2 programs, they cover all the fees when it comes to like equipment and ICE fees and all that stuff. The lower end ones typically, I think from last time I checked, was like $3,000 to $5,000 a year or something like that. So you have to count that in. If you're going to a low end OCHA program, you're probably going to have to pay more fees on top of your school fees. So, but the good ones, like, yeah, they typically pay for everything. And the really high end OCHA programs actually treat players very well. It's good hockey, and they would compete against the lower end D3 programs for sure.
How do you think this affects hockey in Canada from the university standpoint?
For the U sports?
Yeah.
I think they're going to take a hit, unfortunately. Yeah. I think, I really mentioned that in the past video that I think U sports probably going to be hit the hardest because their recruiting strategy was, they can't go NCAA D1 or they can't go NCAA at all. Let's just recruit all these guys that don't really have a place to go after they're 20 years old, you know? But I think those guys, you know, most of them are probably going to go, that the elite ones are going to go NCAA D1 to develop likely. I still think they're going to pick up some guys like, you know, maybe third, fourth liners and major junior that had an okay career, but that a D1 school is not really interested in. I think those guys will still end up going U sports if they value education, but they're not going to get those really solid players anymore at the U sports level. So I think they're going to take a hit. They're probably going to have to start recruiting in like the BCHL, the AJHL, you know, the top junior A leagues in Canada. They're going to have to adjust things a little bit, but I don't think it's going to become terrible hockey, but I think it's going to, you know, maybe drop the caliber down the next couple of years a little bit.
Universities in Canada, I can't remember, do they offer any type of scholarships at all, or is it just, you know, they'll pay for tuition free hockey and you're paying for the enrollment of the school?
So in Canada, if you're in province, it's typically cheaper. Not always, like a lot of Ontario schools, it doesn't matter if you're in province or not, but in Canada it's typically cheaper if you're in province, especially in Quebec, like tuition's very cheap. Usually, if you play major junior, oftentimes players can get a deal with a major junior team where they pay part of the school or almost all the school in Canada. So, you know, I think those packages are pretty attractive to Canadians, which is why I speculate that U Sports has been stronger than NCAA D3, because major junior teams would give really good packages to these players and then they go play U Sports. Yeah, I'd say like the cost in Canada is quite reasonable, honestly. And there's ways to like give scholarship money. There's academic aid in Canada too. There's financial aid as well. It's a little bit different than in the States, but there's good packages in Canada.
So with you going the NCAA route, what made you decide to go that route versus staying in Canada?
The honest answer is that I didn't have a good enough resume to play on a U Sports team. U Sports, like until like this change just happened with NCAA D1 and Major Junior, U Sports back in my day was very strong hockey. They compete against some of the NCAA D1 schools. They do scrimmages against them before the season. It's very, very good hockey, and they typically mainly pick Major Junior guys. So for me, like bouncing around different junior A leagues, you know, I just didn't have the resume to compete at that level. And for me, I ended up committing to an NCAA D3 program that was like low to mid end, you know, so it wasn't that's basically why I took that path. And fortunately, it was the degree I wanted to study in. And I really liked the school when I visited it.
No, everyone's got a different path and you got to choose, you know, life's eventually going to catch up to you one way or the other, right? So you got to have your fallback plan, so to speak, when the show doesn't work out, you know, for the 99.9% of the rest of the world.
I knew that in junior, I was like, yeah, I think the dream of going to the show is over, but let's try and get an education out of it.
That's it. That's where I'm at. It's what, you know, his mom and I talk about all the time. It's, you know, listen, Sal, you're probably not going to go to the show, you know, Europe may be on the table if your development keeps up down the road. Right. But, let's worry about college first. Let's keep what's in front of us, worry about the rest of it later, you know. But on that note, talking about, you know, U Sports, talking about major junior and all the junior leagues in Canada, when you're from the States and you want to try to get to the next level, and we're not talking, you know, this is exclusive of the top 5% conversation. This is the 95% everybody else. Every league in the States has showcases. You know, it's the, you know, you go to, you sign up to go to the showcases. You try to get seen in front of coaches. leagues, you know, like when you're U16, U18, they'll like the NAHL has their prospect kind of showcase leagues where teams get together three or four times a year and they do these major showcases and scouts are there watching. And that's kind of how the whole process works if you're not being, you know, recruited. How does an American player end up potentially getting eyes in Canada, right? The hockey, maybe not across the board, but in some instances is better. I'd say most instances is better level by level, right? And the levels are all different and we're not going to blow everyone's brains out with all the different what levels equivalent to what level in the States. But let's just say on the whole, equivalent levels are better in Canada than in the States. If you wanted your player to have an opportunity to play up there, how does that process work?
Yeah, so I mean, I don't want to do a shameless plug, but honestly, if you hire like somebody who can get your name out there, that's a big win. I would say to do it yourself is totally possible too. How to do it is you start reaching out to coaches. That's the first thing you do. So you look at all the leagues, most of the coach info, it's painstaking to do it. And I had to do it back as a player, but you look through all the coach info online, you find their emails, you find their phone numbers, and you reach out to them. You send your elite prospects link, you send your highlight video, and then you just send a quick snippet. It's short and sweet as to who you are. You try and get on their radar. And if you're good, usually they'll have some interest and they'll look into you more, you know. They might look at some video, they might look at call your coaches and all that stuff. But I would say that's the biggest way to get on the radar is actually reaching out to them. As far as showcases to go, a lot of showcases out there, I'll be honest, are scams. A lot of them, you just pay money, barely anybody in the stands, or they're not really interested. It's this huge tournament of like, you know, 10,000 people there. I'm not going to name any names, but you know, you go to these tournaments and you get lost in the shuffle because they're too big. So if you're looking to go to showcases, find high yield ones where there's a lot of scouts there, they're relatively small, and there's the target scouts that you're looking for. So if you want to go to Canada, you got to find a showcase or a tournament or a camp where there's actually Canadian junior scouts looking at you. If you want to have NCAA D3 schools at you, same thing, you got to find a showcase where there's a lot of those eyes on you, you know? And like you said, like for the top 5% of players, they don't have to worry about it. They're going to get recruited. But for the other guys that fall into like the top, you know, 50 to 75%, they're good players, but they just need, you know, it's a numbers game. You need to put your name out there as much as possible, cast a wide net, and hopefully you get some interest, and then you hopefully get signed and stuff. But I would say getting your name out there through emails, texts, contacting coaches, and then going to key target showcases that can actually promote you. That'd be the biggest thing.
So to piggyback off of that, Jeff and I, you know, we had the opportunity to coach down here in Florida, and, you know, every 8U and 10U parent thinks they are going to play for the Lightning. At what age do you feel is the proper age to start reaching out to these organizations, right? Obviously, I'd like to think, you know, they would talk to the coach that they're playing for, you know, locally as to whether or not they feel that they're ready to move on to that next step. But, you know, to those listening, like, what is the proper age that you feel is the sweet spot, if you will, for eyes to be on your player?
Yeah, the elite players, agents will start talking to them at like 11 or 12 years old. It's crazy, but they don't sign them, but they start getting in their ears and talking to them. For the 95% of other players that are good players, I would say like start putting your name out there around, like you start thinking about it around 14 years old or so. You know, if you're a really good player and you got NCAA D1 potential, they're going to start reaching out to you when it's appropriate after the January 1st deadline of your 15-year-old year. So they're going to start talking to you pretty soon. And then as to when to reach out to coaches and all that stuff, depends on your development, but you know, 15, 16, 17 years old or so. Whenever you're ready to make that jump to junior the following year, that's typically when we tell players to start reaching out and stuff.
So that's really good info. And that's, you know, where my son is now. We did a showcase that got him on his team last year for as a first year junior eligible playing in the USPHL Elite Tier 3. Had a great season. And the coaches, you know, basically recruited him to take him to Premier. You know, they changed teams and they took him with them. But to your point, you know, in that little bit of in between, you didn't know where you were going to go. So, you know, you start reaching out to your point and start sending those clips and emails. And in the, you know, in the elite ranks where people kind of knew him, right? Like you kind of get a little more feedback right away. When you reach out to other leagues, NA3, less response because now you're going somewhere new. So to your point, hammering those coaches in those leagues that don't know who you are versus somebody who's in Canada, in Quebec, you know, that's on the radar every day, that's talking to those coaches or has the advisor or whatever, those kids or those players that may be similar in talent have that leg up just because they have either the ear of a coach or they know of a guy or they have an advisor that's talking to a coach. As much as it sucks to say, the old adage, I think, of if you're good enough, you'll be found, somewhat is true, but that's, I think, only for the top 2%. I think everybody else has to get 100%. Found.
Yeah, I agree 100%. If you're Connor McDavid, you will be found. Like, you're that good, they're going to find you. You don't have to worry about any of this. But if you're a good player, unfortunately, there's a lot of good players out there, and you need to be good at marketing yourself, you know? Whether somebody does it for you, whether it's a coach, a family member that's got a lot of hockey connections, an agent or advisor, whoever it is, you need to get your name out there to as many people as possible and then see who's like actually interested and then pursue that relationship. You know, you don't want to be overbearing either where you're sending like, you know, daily updates to the coach or else they'll block your number and not talk to you anymore. But you want to do it enough where, you know, just quick check-ins like once in a while, just so you're kind of on their radar. And you'll gauge too. You'll know if they're replying back to you pretty quick, you know, if they show that they have some sort of interest, you'll get the feel of it that they're actually interested in you, you know? So I'd say definitely like reaching out to as many as possible whenever the timing's right. I think that does go a long way for the players that aren't elite, but that are good hockey players.
So Braden, for someone that wants to utilize your service, just so parents aren't stepping on toes, like if they utilize your service, how often are you reaching out to certain coaches in your network? And, you know, I'm actually in the recruiting business professionally. So it's, you know, one of those things where I'll leave it to the professional. Do you ever have that where you're stepping or the parents are trying to overstep you? And
It does happen sometimes. We're pretty clear with the parents. Like for us anyways, like we talk to all the coaches and stuff until there's like actual good interest where it makes sense for the parent and the player to talk to the coach. Usually like we do all the reaching out. We call the coach. Well, we usually go by texting. So we text the target coaches that we think are good. We see who's got interest. And then from there, we narrow down the options. We call them. We talk about the player. We go back and forth. And then, you know, usually we get a couple offers or something like that, present it to the player and the parent. At that point, usually the player will call and the parent will kind of listen in, call a couple coaches, see what's the best fit that we help like make a decision together. We do get the odd case where parents like overstep and they just reach out, they go rogue and reach out to a bunch of teams. We try to encourage not to do that because when you're reaching out and the parent also does it, the coach is kind of confused, you know, it's kind of counterproductive at that point. And what I usually tell people is like, if you want to do it all yourself, like don't pay the money, just do it yourself. You know, it's much better at that point. So most like actually listen to us, but you get the odd one that doesn't. Yeah.
I believe it for sure. Hockey parents are the breed we know them to be. Let's leave it at that.
Right.
So Braden Pearl with AHA Advancement Hockey Advising. Three showcases in the summer of 2025. I know you didn't want to do the shameless plug, but I'm going to ask you about it because I want to hear what makes your showcases different than the money grab ones you were talking about, other than their locations. I mean, I am a UNH alum, so I know the Whittemore Center, great sheet of ice up there, beautiful area. Yeah. Merrimack, another great sheet, and then I'm less familiar with the Norwich sheet in Vermont, but three great spots in the summer of 2025. Can you elaborate on what that kind of showcase series looks like? Some maybe high points on who you're bringing, and again, what separates your showcases from everyone else's?
Yeah, it's a great question. I remember, advisors on our team and some partners on our team and stuff. They brought it up like 3 years ago. Hey, do you want to do a showcase? I'm like, it's so much work. There's so much that goes into it. I'd rather focus on the advising, kind of build that and focus on that. But then the more I thought about it, the more it's like, I couldn't really find showcases that met my ideal criteria of what a good showcase is for a lot of players. And that is a showcase that's not too big. So for us, for example, it's like 130 to 150 players, nothing too big. A showcase that has a lot of scouting from diverse leagues. So NCAA D1, D3, Junior A from a bunch of different leagues and prep schools. And the reason why that's important is because not every player is looking to have an NCAA D1 coach talk to them. Some really just need an EHL coach to sign them that year. So that's a big thing, having a lot of coaches there. Teams not being too big. I've been to showcases before where like there was, you know, five lines, 7D and three goalies, and you get four shifts in the game or something like that, you know? So I thought that was ridiculous. And I just wanted to make sure that there's actually good showcases out there. There's a few, but there wasn't that many. And I just decided, you know what, let's try it out, see how it happens. If the first year goes well, we'll continue it. The first year we did it, it was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. It went decent for the first showcase, but it was tough. Then the second year went really well when we did our second one. And then last year we did one in Vermont, one in Merrimack. It was the first year where we did two, and they both went extremely well. And there's just a lot of like coaches from the various levels there. And and we're like, you know what, let's try and do a third one in UNH. The rink called us. They kind of gave us the opportunity. I really like the sheet of ice there. Like you said, it's a great spot to play. And yeah, that's kind of what made us do the third one. So I think we're going to cap it at three. I don't think we're going to go to like four or five, something like that. But I think the three each year repeating, it's kind of like the vision we have, where we can do three solid showcases for people at different dates, where they get exposure, where it's actually a small showcase where they can get good ice time and get seen. So that was kind of like the inspiration behind it. Sorry if I went on a rant on promoting it and stuff, but
no.
Yeah, that was like the inspiration behind the whole idea. But it was, again, one of those things kind of happened by accident.
So when you try to limit the numbers, right? Is there a certain criteria? Because again, we all know there's families out there that they will pay whatever it takes to have their kid, you know, attend a certain showcase, even though their skill level may not be at the level that helps the other kids that are there, right? So yeah. Is there a certain criteria then that people have to fill out, or how do you cut that off, and how do you, you know, manage that piece?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's something we didn't think of in our first showcase. And when we did it, we saw a couple of players here that don't belong. And we learned as we went. And now what we do is, like, when people fill out online, they have to put like where they play, all their info and everything. That you have to take like a good 5-10 minutes to actually fill out everything and all that. So they pay right away, but we only accept the payment after we review the profile. So we look at them on Elite Prospects. We make sure that they're actually playing, like, let's say AAA or in a junior league or something like that. Get a couple AA players, but if they have good stats and all that stuff, you know, typically we let them go in. But yeah, if it's a guy that's playing like, you know, midget B, you know, it's just not a profile that's competitive, we're not going to accept it. We're just going to refund them the money. So that's kind of the process that we go through.
Wonderful. And if anybody listening wants to get more info on what you're doing, potentially sign up for the camps, the showcases, I'm sorry, and go down that road, where can they find you? And correct me if I'm wrong, but you're offering a little Black Friday deal, if I saw the socials correctly.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, so we're offering the Black Friday deal. And my team kind of pushed me to do it, so we're doing that, but they can find it on our website. On social media, we're like pretty much everywhere, YouTube, Instagram, even on TikTok. I got forced to do TikTok videos since the past year.
So did Kevin. He feels your pain.
So you kind of know how it goes. But yeah, you can find us everywhere. And there's all the showcase info, you know, all the dates, all that. It's all on our showcases tab on our website. Super easy to find.
Awesome. And you can find more from AHA at ahadvising.com. And again, all the socials. And Braden, man, it has been super insightful and enlightening to hear your take on hockey. I love getting into the Canadian aspect of a little more than we have in the past, but it really all ties together. And if you're listening, you're a 16, 17, 18 year old player that's still trying to make it, you know, you're in that, you know, 50% number, right? 75% number, the long runway, the 5-year kid. There are options for you out there. Surround yourself with good people, put yourself in good situations, and work hard, and it may just work out for you. So, Braden, we appreciate you taking the time to join us in the nest, and wish you all the best in the upcoming season. And if you are eating turkey at any time in the next 6 weeks, man, we hope you enjoy it and have a good holiday.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me. I'll enjoy the turkey for sure.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you,
Kevin. Bye. We will talk to you on the other side, my friend. If I don't talk to you, enjoy your 3 turkeys. It's been a blast, as always.
Always, my friend. And based on that info, we already are not going to make the cut for Braden's
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. My elite prospects is empty. There's no showcase in my future. That's for sure. I may try to, maybe I can be a guest shooter at the UNH camp just to get on that sheet of ice one more time up there. Maybe I can finagle that a little bit. We'll have to see. Yeah. Kev, you're a beauty, buddy. We'll see you.
All right. Take care.
Cheers.
Everyone.